good strengths.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess I'm having a hard time understanding why they would knock us down on.
Well,
and that's not the only one, but you look at some of the other areas as well. I'm just pulled that one out as
an example. The B is a relatively high mark for them, so I would say that they were, I think, struck by the continuing onslaught of ballot initiatives, which they see as hamstringing the legislature and being able to do their job in this area. That's really where the most emphasis was.
Right, right.
Mr. Chair, could I?
Yes, Representative Gord.
I'm kind of curious as to who they is.
Yes.
Or are.
Yeah, there is, in fact, I have a handout here, if you'd like to see it, on how we do the grades. And they this is done by the Maxwell School at Syracuse University. They have a team that is involved in the development of all of this information. Two writers who report on this stuff regularly in Governing Magazine actually write the report. But this is done in a systematic way where the researchers come up with their analysis for each of the sections for each of the states. It's then reviewed by a team of experts, and if the research and the experts are not in agreement, then they have another way of reaching the final assessment. Some of it is relative. You can't go and find a place where each of the qualities is assigned an absolute number score, which somehow could be completely found in the data. So some of it is their own assessment, but they do try and do both an expert and a researcher look at each of the categories for each of the states.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Jeff, I'm going to, since I've got six members mm-hmm. here now, I'm going to go ahead and interrupt you for a second, a couple of minutes maybe. So I'm going to temporarily close the informational meeting. I'm going to open a work session on HCR 11. Representative Jensen, would you like to come forward, please? Members, you'll remember that HCR 11, we passed that, but we had to bring it back because there was an inaccuracy, so we do have an amendment to adopt to it. Representative Jensen.
Good morning, Chair Crummell and members of the committee, and thank you for rehearing this and looking at the amendment. As we recall, it was referred back from the floor, and our reason for doing so was we had some inaccuracy in the numbers that were listed there, and the last thing in the world we'd want to do, I think, on a memorial of this type would be not to be reasonably accurate as far as our numbers were concerned. So the amendment that you have is a very simple amendment. It simply deletes the 54,246 and replaces that with 36,940. Just as a matter of some clarification, the number 54,246 was a number that was arrived at because that was the total number of military personnel who died during the Korean conflict. They might have been in Germany, they might have been in the United States, they might have been anywhere in the world, and their causes of death would have ranged from heart attacks to excess partying, perhaps. The number 36,940 that you have there are the number of military personnel who died in Korea or perhaps might have died later in a military hospital someplace, but as a consequence of having been in Korea. And we therefore recommend to the committee that you look at the number 36, that you accept the amendment of 36,940. As being more accurate. And I would also make one final point, and I know the time and appreciate the time is short for everything here, but one final comment. You will understand and appreciate that these numbers will not always, but will likely be in some flux as the years go by, because as new casualties are discovered, people that were missing in action and it's later found or determined that they were killed in action, then that number would go up accordingly with that. So there's always some variation in that number. Thank you very much, and be happy to respond to any questions on this.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Cruz.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 Amendment HCR 11.
Thank you. Representative Cruz moves the Dash 1 amendments to HCR 11. Is there any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered.
Representative Cruz, HCR 11 as amended to the floor to do pass recommendation.
Representative Cruz moves HCR 11 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any? Clerk, call the roll, please.
Representative Brown.
Aye.
Representative Farrar.
Aye.
Representative
Kupori. Excused.
Representative Hill.
Aye.
Representative Cruz.
Aye.
Representative March.
Aye.
Representative Wirth.
Absent. Chair Cromer. HCR 11 having received, as amended, received the constitutional required majority, is declared passed. Representative Jensen, will you still carry it on?
We'll be happy to. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And thank you for your patience. Oh, yeah, she did. Just excused him. Yeah, I'm sorry. Check that on Representative Wirth. She's excused. I'll close the work session on HCR 11.
And reopen.
Oh, I'm going to reopen the informational meeting from the Oregon Progress Board.
Yep. Mr. Chair, thank you very much. If there are no other issues on the grades, I want to do a little comparison to give you some information about how Oregon compares to other states. Two of the three top-ranked states in the country are our neighbors. Both Utah and Washington each received A minuses, which were the highest rankings that any state received. The other state that received the A minus was the state of Michigan. Only one state in the union got a C minus. So that the grades are pretty high here, starting at the bottom, and that was Alabama. No D's, no F's. Oregon has received an overall grade of a C plus. If you look at just to give you a little more information on where Oregon stands, what this shows is. The range for each of the grades. So you see on the bottom here, for instance, financial management, you can see that the lowest grade was a C, the highest grade was an A minus, and the average grade was right here, the red line, which is a B. So Oregon was under the average whenever it's under that red line. And you can see in almost every instance, Oregon is either at the average or under the average for each of the areas. The only areas where we are an average state is in the capital management, and the only area where we're above average is managing for results, where we are actually lower than we were. We reviewed as the national leader last time around, and we got knocked down one third of one grade. So you can see that for some of these, there's not a lot of variation between the highest state and the highest state and the lowest state. This shows how Oregon changed from 1999 to 2001. And one thing to notice here is that a lot of the lower states in 1999 took action as a result of this, and I know this happened in many states, and they moved up. So we don't have anybody now. You can see we had a lot of lower grades in 1999, and those have all vanished now. So the ranges are much more narrow for all the states this year than they were the first time that was done. And as you can see, once again, in each of the categories, except one, Oregon went down by one third of one grade. To compare with two of our neighbors, one to the north and one to the south, Washington is top ranked in almost every one of the categories. The only one they didn't get an A in was financial management. So we have a lot to learn from our neighbor in the north. If you look at California, on the other hand, Oregon is right about where they are. We're right at the same place in financial management. We're the same place for human resources. We're actually under in info. We're a little over on the rankings for capital management. We're well over for managing for results, and we have the same overall ranking as they do this year. The last two handouts I won't spend a lot of time on, but if you want more information on this, it's in the magazine. I'm happy to make anybody any hard copies of that you want, but you can find what the criteria is. So each of the areas, it has what they use to make the judgment, and then they also have more information, for instance, in the managing for results side, you can find out that state legislatures in only 7 states are responsible for managing the information when it comes to results. The main manager is the governor's office or agencies themselves. So you can get lots more information. I'm not going to spend your time on that, but there is a lot of information there for us to learn from and to really start to focus in on it if we choose to. So those are my remarks. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff. Are there any questions for Mr. Trines? We must have asked them before, when we were back on the grade. I do want to ask one thing on table 6. I just want to make sure that I'm understanding what this table is showing me.
Right.
So the governor's office in 32 states has primary responsibility for developing performance measures of the agencies.
Right.
And then what happens in evidently in those 32 states is that the legislature authorizes whatever they're going to need to carry to meet those and evaluates whether the measures were met or not. Is that
well? The only thing this says is who has primary responsibility. So in 7 states like Florida, for instance, the state of Florida, the legislature runs the performance measurement process statewide. They establish them. They have staff that evaluates them. They run the process. That's unusual. But what this shows is which parts of state government either run the process or run it with some other part. Because you can see that this adds up to more than 50 states. So we have we have in many instances more than one part of state government that views itself as having primary responsibility.
Okay, so because I also noticed that agencies, for example, there's 45 states that the agencies have primary responsibility for developing. So that could be in concert with the governor's office or in concert with the legislative committee or in concert with the state legislature.
We would be one of those states where the agencies have primary responsibility. In fact, I would imagine that would be the only answer that we would have, because agencies do run that whole process themselves. The legislature now establishes some standards for what they, how to report them as part of the budget process, but they don't have any role in developing the measures. That's up to the agencies.
You know, one of the things that's been a source of frustration for Representative Hill has been, the agencies as they're coming in and the waste process don't really plan, and that's one of the things that he seems to have been hitting on quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Gerard?
Jeff, there's a part of me that really resents people in New York who have never been to Oregon telling us how to run our government, but I'm real curious as to how the areas that they evaluate each state was developed. I mean, who sat down and decided that this is the criteria? I would hope that if maybe a different set of criteria were used or an intermingling of different, that Washington wouldn't look so good. you know, but...
Right. Mr. Chair, Representative Garrard, there has been criticism of this process as leaning towards more centralized forms of state government. That's the one thing that I've heard that has a, if you will, an East Coast sort of bias. I would add that one of the lead researchers on this project is an Oregonian. He was actually was part of the Oregon Shines update when we did it last time. He was at the U of O then, and he went to the Maxwell School. So I know there's some Oregon influence in the development of this, but this was done as part of a project out of the magazine. So if you respect the work of Governing Magazine as a representative look at how state and local government works, that's, you know, it's, they put their mark on it and they think these are the most important. I mean, these are all process measures. These are things about how well we do what we do as the functions of state government. I'm not giving you a very good answer because I wasn't involved in the development, but I know the centralized bias is one of the things that folks in initiative states especially and states that are not as centralized don't like about it. But Washington is not a centralized state, so the fact that they received one of the highest grades would argue that it's not always leaning. Probably Maryland is the state with the most central executive authority, and they don't do that well in this. So,
quick follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I guess your comment about Oregon has a lot of work to do to catch up with Washington, or to be more like Washington, that raised the hair on the back of my neck a little bit. So,
Mr. Chair, Representative Garrard, thank you very much for the first that observation. I didn't say Utah, you noticed.
Thank you very much. We appreciate every criticism.
Okay.
Great.
Any other questions for Mr. Grimes? Jeff, thank you very much for coming and giving us the update. I do appreciate it. And with that, I'm going to close the informational meeting on from the Oregon Progress Board, and I'm going to... Do we know yet? He is coming? Okay. I'm going to go ahead and open a public hearing on House Bill 3833. We have people that are going to be filtering in and out because this is also the time that the budget hearing happens to be going on the state agency that it is heavily involved with this bill. So, and Representative Butler is on his way, but while we're waiting, I'm going to go ahead and start calling people up to testify. Well, Ralph's not here yet. Bill's not here yet.
Well, Bill's outside the hall.
Is he? You want to go ahead and get in? Jennifer, did you have anything you wanted to say, or are you?
Close the hearing on this and go on.
Okay. Thanks. Meg, do you guys want to testify?
Sorry.
Okay. Well, did you want to say?
Oh. Mr.
Nobody's
Chair,
testifying. They're just going to watch.
We have three votes to cancel the hearing and go have coffee.
What's that?
We have three votes to cancel the hearing and go have coffee.
Oh, I see.
I got my coffee.
Oh, here's Bill.
He was talking to me.
Okay. That'd be great.
Late shower.
Bill, go ahead and come on up, and then when you're... And when Representative Butler comes in, I'm going to have him just join you, if that's all right. Is it?
He can replace me.
He can replace you. So are you trying to say that you can be replaced?
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Bill Cross, and I'm here today on behalf of several different clients, including the Oregon Landscape Contractors Association, the Oregon Building Officials Association, the Oregon Mechanical Officials Association, and the Building Owners and Managers Associations. They have had a chance to review House Bill 3833 and have some concerns about the bill as drafted. First, the Landscape Contractors Association has been working, in fact, on a bill to make the Landscape Contractors Board a semi-independent board. In fact, all of you voted for that bill earlier this session, House Bill 2127. It's over in the Senate, has been referred by the Substantive Committee there with a due pass to Ways and Means.
Representative Butler, why don't you go ahead and come right on up, please, and
I'll excuse myself for a few moments.
Just stay right there, Bill. That's fine. Let me go ahead and interrupt Bill and Representative Butler.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm honored to be with you today. Tom Butler from House District 60. I've asked Bill if he would help with any of the issues that he felt that he might be able to to address in House Bill 3833. 3833 grabs a hold of a whole group of regulating industries within the state and asks that group of people or directs that that group of people could be moved to semi-independent status, making them one step further from state government than where they are now. This does not preclude them from being subject to all of the state laws relative to construction or appraisal or building codes, anything of those kinds of natures. It doesn't leave us less safe. It merely says that by moving themselves one step further away from the actual state as independent boards, they may not come under the direct office of the DCBS, the Department of Consumer and Business Services, and that's the budget that we're hearing right now in the Ways and Means. As a matter of fact, we were right in the middle of public testimony and input with some fairly angry people regarding some of these boards, and very unhappy with the way that DCBS is taking accountability. And so what I would share with you is that I do know that there is a Senate bill which has the Appraiser Certification and Licensure Board already, I think it's passed the Senate at this particular point. Those folks were nigh on to some degree of anarchy over the leadership that is directed to come down and tell them how they're going to appraise and those kinds of things. And these are non-technical people that are directing these in many instances and telling them what they're going to do, as opposed to boards being able to elect their own executive. And so this bill would look at both the Construction Contractors Board, the Landscape Contractors Board, and I understand there's a House Bill 2172 that addresses that particular board. Again, various members of the chambers, of the bicameral chambers, have come forward with some of these very issues. Perhaps the Board of Boiler Rules, Electrical Elevator Board, Manufactured Structured Parks Board, Plumbing Boards, they haven't really expressed a great interest in this. They seem to be fine sequestered in the DCBS, and if they have no compelling reason or desire to be removed, then that would be fine too, and they could be amended out of this bill. However, let me do say this as kind of one parting shot. I have both pros and cons of members of the industries and unions that are involved here within these that say we like it, we don't like it, and so there's really no groundswell in some of the other kinds of boards. But in a from strictly a budgetary standpoint, let me share this with you. The government overhead to assist one of these boards runs almost one-fifth of their budget. So when you pay $100 in your annual licensing, whether it's for a teacher or a health practitioner of some sort, for every $100 that you put in, $20 of that will go next door to the Department of Administrative Services to cover a bunch of the activities that governors and the government is involved with. And that's not all bad. They get out of that some audit work, and they get some other kinds of things. But even when we've got the government oversight and audits and so forth, we're handling another one of those that's on the back burner right now too, where some of the money went south, even with the DCBS basically cutting the checks. So there's no guarantee. And with the with a more proactive board, more actively involved, being able to select their own director from amongst their own ranks, it's been my experience, and we're seeing this firsthand in some of these boards that are saying, give me liberty, or give me another state, that these folks are not interested in continuing on to have the Department of Consumer and Business Affairs folks come and tell them who's going to direct them and how they're going to do business, and then basically run kind of roughshod over them in some instances. And that's the genesis of 3833. It's certainly wide open for amendment, particularly where other bills in the House and the Senate address some of the agencies and already have wheels on them. But I would strongly encourage your support in looking at those other agencies that do not that have expressed some interest of semi-autonomy, including the construction contractors and anyone else. That's one that I can see immediately that has expressed interest to come out under this, which does not have a direct bill that I know of right at this moment that's got wheels on it somewhere else. So I'm available for questions if you'd like.
Okay. Questions for Representative Butler. Okay.
Thank you,
any at this Chair. Point. I know you have to get back over to the Ways and Means.
I do want to also express my gratitude for both your committee and hearing this and allowing me to come forward and testify. And I do want to express my gratitude for Bill Cross and the W.C. Cross Company for helping and assisting in all of the construction trades industries. And he has been most helpful. He's been an excellent resource for us. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bill, would you like to go ahead and continue with your testimony, please?
Certainly, Mr. Chair. Again, for the record, my name is Bill Cross. When you get to the specialty code boards in the building codes division, several of my clients who are interested in building codes do have some concerns about the recommendation on semi-independent boards. And while there are some benefits, which is why the Landscape Contractors Board have pursued it, why it may be appropriate for CCB, certainly the appraisers I know are pursuing it, the relationship between the different specialty code boards is a little different, and there's some there are relationships that are based on some common staffing support, coordination of the codes, coordination of program implementations, in terms of uniformity and consistency in the enforcement of the codes, the differing specialty codes. There may, the semi-independent board status may not be the right approach. I don't know. We're concerned about that, though, and so I guess the comments I'm making really are we're neutral on the proposal. We're a little uncomfortable about this going with a semi-independent board status. It may impact the ability to coordinate those organizations that do need to work together. There may be some cost savings. There also could be some cost inefficiencies, too, in that they do use some common support staff, and there'd be some arrangements that you might be able to overcome, certainly, but it's just something that we haven't had enough time to really analyze. So I guess we're kind of suggesting that maybe we're not comfortable, supporting that aspect yet. However, the one concept that is of appeal to the Building Owners and Managers Association and the Oregon Building Officials Association and the Oregon Mechanical Officials Association would be to look at those different specialty code boards and to address the issue of policymaking authority. Each of those boards has different either policymaking or advisory authorities, ranging from the Electrical and Elevator Board, which for the most part is policymaking, although in some instances it's concurrent with the consent or approval of the administrator of the division or the director of the department, to the Structural Board, which is principally advisory and cannot adopt rules or policies or codes without the approval of the director. And there was a study, an interim task force that was set up by the legislature last session, Senate Bill 803 task force, that looked at, you know, the advantages, disadvantages of maybe consolidating these boards. And their conclusion was that we're probably better off with the separate boards. They bring in the special expertise and the technical expertise of the interest groups that are involved in the application of those codes, and that retaining the integrity of each of those boards makes some sense. However, the one recommendation that task group did make was that there might be some benefit in having uniform, consistent policymaking authority amongst the different boards. And that would be an area that if this committee is interested, if Representative Butler is interested in pursuing, we would certainly be willing to work with you on trying to address that issue. As I say, the bigger breadth of the bill would be an area that we're just not comfortable supporting at this point in time. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Okay. Any questions? Thank you for your time. Mr. Cross. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Carl. Mr. Cross, on your testimony in the written, you have the transfer of all the surcharge funds to rural program services. Could you tell me where that's at in the bill and what you're talking about?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, I'm not exactly sure now where it is in the bill.
I'm not either.
I didn't quite get a chance to memorize it yet, but there is a section in here that addresses, there's currently an 8% surcharge, and portions of that surcharge are all dedicated to different aspects of building code administration, education, training. Right now, 4% goes to assist program delivery in rural areas where no city or county has assumed the program and the state is providing those services, and this would transfer the full 8%, and we would be worried about then the lack of funding in the areas that would no longer receive that surcharge. For example, the code adoption, code interpretation processes, the education and training that's provided through the 1%. I mean, there would be a concern about what would happen to the support that surcharge currently provides it financially. So that was a concern to us.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Bill. Well, I don't see Ralph here yet. Was he testifying over there? Is there anybody else who would like to testify on House Bill 3833? This is rather interesting. Mr. Kudel, would you mind taking a question?
Sure.
If you would go ahead and state your name.
My name is Ken Kudel. I'm the administrator of the Construction Contractors Board and the Landscape Contractors Board.
Thank you. I'm just curious, sort of from where you sit on this. Why would it looks like there's a pretty close relationship between two things, and DCBS sort of brings that together. One is how one board, as I was reading through the bill, you know, how one board needs to relate to the other. For example, the structures board, and then looking at the elevator board, and the plumbers board, and the electrical board, and so on. How all of these sort of fit together, and they do need to be able to work sort of side by side and with each other. But then the other side to that is why would what's the advantage that we could gain by basically exploding this this agency apart and having each board be their own semi-independent agency? And I know there's two questions wrapped up there. And
sure. members of the committee, I'm not sure I can respond as well to that as I can with the Construction Contractors Board.
That's fine. Go ahead and relate it.
But going back to 1987, when the Department of Commerce was taken apart, at that point, the Construction Contractors Board was made a freestanding agency, and the Construction Contractors Board, at the governor's request, entered into an interagency agreement with the Landscape Contractors Board to, with the same staff, administer both programs. There's a fair amount of similarity in that. The Landscape Contractors Board has, over the years, gotten more dissatisfied with the big agency influencing what they did, and there is that kind of an influence. The Landscape Contractors Board has believed for a number of years that they could do a better job of enforcement if they had fewer people, but geared strictly to dealing with their problems of a landscape contracting business as opposed to construction. So they proposed at this point to go a semi-independent, and that bill is proceeding, and we're working very closely with them to make that happen. But the Construction Contractors Board nor the Landscape Contractors Board, neither are part of the Department of Consumer Business Services at the present time. We're already freestanding agencies. We report to the governor through the Department of Administrative Services, through the director of the Department of Administrative okay. Services. So if you were to make the Construction Contractors Board or the a semi-independent agency, as I see the bill in simplifying it, the only two things that would impact them would be purchasing and budget approval. The employees still are basically state employees, are part of the PERS system. The budget approval would be done by a board, and the boards in this case is a 9-member board appointed by the governor. Six of those are contractors, two are public members, one is an elected local official, and they would make the policy decision of what is the budget for this agency going to be. They would adopt it through hearings under Administrative Procedures Act. And purchasing, they would be able to purchase and manage their fares in a different fashion rather than going through the state agencies. Probably of all the boards that you've looked at, the Construction Contractors Board, from a standpoint of staffing, is better equipped to do that than any of the others, because again, it's the larger of the boards. The Construction Contractors Board has a staff of 64 employees. There are almost 45,000 licensed contractors in the state. Almost every year there's something added to the enforcement or the certification or the licensing requirements to Construction Contractors Board, and more recently, home inspector certification of those who do home inspection. Currently, there are about over 400 certified home inspectors in this state, and some of you run across that or maybe use them, or some of your constituents have had need to have a home inspector tell them whether the house, what problems are in this house that they propose to buy, or if you're a seller, what do I need to fix before I offer it for sale. So that's kind of where it is. The Construction Contractors Board had a board meeting just last week. They are interested in this proposal. They would be more interested, I think, in it happening next legislative session, and a whole lot of time to talk about it and work on it. But they are certainly interested in this proposal. If you talk to board administrators, and I've been an administrator for 18 years, I'm leaving in June of this year. Craig Smith has been chosen for my replacement in June, so I'm leaving and looking back at this. One of the most frustrating things I deal with is going through this budget approval process. And the reason that is that it's frustrating is I take the budget proposal to a board of 9 people who give me policy, say this is what we ought to go forward with, and then I still have to sell that to a group of other people, including yourselves, and it is a dual process that would be eliminated with boards. Now, I don't know if that helps you any or not. The other boards that are in the Department of Consumer Business Services have always been kind of together. As my memory says, they've always been. There was at one point 4 years ago the Building Codes Division was a freestanding agency like the Construction Contractors Board. It was brought into the Department of Consumer and Business Services, but when it was a freestanding agency, those boards were all part of that Building Codes agency. And I can't for the life of me see how you would make all of them semi-independent, because they do interrelate, and we relate to them from the standpoint of a licensed construction contractor who does plumbing also has to be a licensed plumbing contractor. So you could say it's a dual license, but it serves different purposes, and so we work very closely with them. And in fact, have a tie-in on our database on our website so that you're checking on a licensed contractor. You can also check on whether that contractor's doing plumbing or electrical, whether they also have their license current for that also.
Okay. Thank you very much. Are there any other questions for Mr. Trudell? Thank you very much. Appreciate your response. Is there anybody else that wishes to, Joe?
Chair Crumble, members of the committee. Joe Landry, for the record, representing the organized portions of the electrical and plumbing industry, NECA, IBW, and PMCA, and Local 280. I'd like to say a few comments about this. We have our own issues with the administration of the statewide building code, and we have our own ideas about how to solve those problems, and we don't necessarily think this is the right answer for us. And we think that a centralized administration of all the different types of building codes is important to resolve any types of conflicts that might arise. For instance, there's separate boards that are adopting the 1 and 2 family code, and we adopt the commercial portion of the electrical code, but sometimes there are conflicts between those two independent boards, and oftentimes we need the mediation of a centralized agency. So in generally, we don't think this solves any of our problems, and we're not real interested in seeing it move forward.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions? Okay, thank you. Anybody else that wishes to testify? Is Ralph going to come over? Or? Oh, he was in the process of testifying? He's probably still testifying.
Yeah.
Is there, Ron, did you want to come up?
Similar testimony.
Similar explosion. I hate to feel I'm just a stopgap here, but...
Hey, but, you know, somebody's got to be...
I don't sing very well, but I can dance like heck. Chair Crumble, members of the committee, my name is Ron Murray, for the record. I represent the United Association of Plumbers and Steam Fitters. I think a pertinent point that I might be able to bring to you is I sit on a board, was appointed by the governor to a board that you folks created in the last session through Senate Bill 512, which is called Tri-County Consolidation. And to kind of give you an idea, there are 29 separate building agencies in the Portland metropolitan area. If you're a contractor, you can literally install a water heater in, for example, Wilsonville and have an inspector inspect it. You can cross the street and install a water heater in the exact same fashion in Clackamas County and have a Clackamas County inspector look at it. And although we're using the same code and the same standard, that job may be turned down because that inspector just doesn't quite like the way you did it. Everything is a little bit different. So you can imagine trying to run a business and you have 29 different agencies, and some of them might have 100 inspectors, some might only have 1 or 2, but everyone kind of has their own idea on how that code should be interpreted. And through the Tri-County Board, we actually have like a code consistency task force, which I'm the chair of, to try to bring everyone on the same page. And it really is a very, very, very successful program. And Building Codes has been very supportive and has found harmony. And sure, we have little debates here and there. But all in all, the process is really, really working well. And I'm kind of a neophyte, I think, to politics and government. But to try to see everyone work together and it actually works is really a success story. I think with the bill that we have before us, what we're trying to do is dismantle that process. And the thing that I think that's most critical to us, and as another specific example, will be the high technology industry, where if you want to build a high tech plant in Washington County, it might be different than building it in Gresham. And it's really, really tough on the industry. And specifically, we have one of the largest mechanical contractors in the world that specializes in high-tech plants. And they're getting really nervous because it is different to build a plant in Gresham than it is Eugene, than it is in Oregon. And so we're involved in trying to bring this consensus, and it really is working very well. We really kind of see this bill as dismantling that entire process. We look at Senate Bill 512 and the Tri-County process as hopefully it might be a model for the entire state. And as I said, it really is successful. And I think building officials, communities, contractors, everyone is working toward this process, and it really is working well. So we kind of have a jaundiced view, I think, of what where this bill could take us. So if I could answer any questions.
Thank you. Thank you. Are there any questions? Representative March?
Thank you. And as I understand this program, you can go to like one location and get a permit or a series of permits that will allow you to do an installation in any of the 27 jurisdictions just by going to one place now rather than going to 27.
Chair Kremel and Representative March, that's exactly correct, and it's called the minor label process. And a contractor can actually buy them by the page. So you buy 10 permits. And the way the process works then is when you go out, you do your installation, and no one knows where you're going or anything. You just buy the permits like buying a book of postage stamps. You go out, you do your installation, and not all installations will qualify. I mean, we try to keep them simplistic, and you just take that label and you stick it on. I'm going to use the term water heater because I'm a plumber. So you stick it on the water heater. And then in your book, you write down the address of your installation, and when you do all 10, you turn it in to the state. And then they can pick one installation, and they go out and do an inspection. And so minor labels are much less expensive than standard permits. So it's a good thing for the consumer, a good thing for the contractor, and it really speeds up the process. The onus here is that if they go out and do an inspection and it fails, my understanding is now you have to buy the standard permit, and they just keep going down the list now, and you have to pay for every inspection. So there's a good faith thing here that you're going to do it right, and it's just a tremendously successful program. And here again, that's operated by the state. And we'd like to see that spread. So,
thank you.
Okay, thank you. Other questions? Ron, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Ralph, the long-awaited Ralph Bruner. Yes, we have been having fill-ins until you could get here.
Wrong-awaited.
Wrong-awaited.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Ralph Groner with AFSCME. Council 75. I was the reason I couldn't be here, and there are like 8 or 9 others that would like to be here, is right now we're all testifying on our budget in front of Ways. I just completed mine, so let me just iterate, because I already went through a few things with you folks, why I'm opposed to House Bill 3833, at least the part that affects state building codes division. I had heard it was amended and that I was okay and wouldn't have to testify, and then I found out that what I was told by numerous people, the amendments haven't come in, so I have to speak in opposition to it at this time. One, I'd just like to say that building codes in this state began in 1973. You all knew that anyway, so it's 28 years old. We led the nation in consolidation of our building codes. We're disparate, spread all over the map. And since that time, we have all worked to balance the system. And by that, I mean, I'll use a couple bills as examples. Just 3 sessions ago, we passed Senate Bill 35, which said, state, you're going to have oversight over these local and private jurisdictions that are in the inspection business. We want to make sure that you're the one who was given this responsibility. You're the one who makes sure the job's done right out there on behalf of the consumer. Senate Bill 587, you passed last session, and that bill, basically, you may not have been aware of it, but it set up some consumer protections and chief inspectors so that now if you have a disagreement as a consumer or a builder, a developer, a plumbing contractor, electrical contractor, you go right to that and cut out all the in-between, right to that inspector. 512 was just talked to, but that's a regional model that I'm excited about because it allows us to work on the economy of this state in a much more rapid fashion, accelerated, so that we can get these permits out and we can grow this economy, as we all know why that's important, but done fairly. But I want to comment a little bit about why I think 3833 is really, one, a political mistake, but two, it's a mistake in terms of the work group. Well, it's a political mistake because I need to teach, and I just did Ways and Means. There is a work group on building inspection in Oregon that's developed over time into probably the finest model I've seen in the nation. And I've been involved with building inspection programs probably 30 years, and I wish I hadn't been. It caused my blood pressure to go up, but I enjoy this. The fact of the matter is that the work group includes business, i.e. plumbing contractors, electrical contractors, Oregon Home Builders Association, Association of General Contractors, and I'm probably missing some main players. It includes city, sitting here, representation. It includes county representation. It includes private sector representation, and it includes labor. I've never missed them, because if I do, I'm going to end up dead. But the result of that work group has been, let me tell you what we're working on this session, collectively and together. We worked on 35 together. We worked on Senate Bill 587 together. We worked on 512 together. We're currently working on a master builder program, which I could have opposed but didn't, because our organization is collectively working together. Inspectors as enforcement officers, rather than just inspecting, they also have the right to make sure you have your license out there at the local level. Total programs, what size of cities, we've basically grandfathered all those in at my request, and we're okay on that. So I don't have any further comment, but it's how the work group works. Quite frankly, if the work group supports measures, we work collectively and cooperatively and with a lot of knowledge. Some of the people have been involved, that's all they do, is work on this stuff. So I'm not sure 3833 takes into account the literally thousands of people in this state that are, in my case, ask me, has probably 90% of all small cities building inspection and programs, another 90% of all counties in Oregon, plus all the state building inspection programs. So it's a big deal to us. The reason we would oppose it is we have a wonderful model that was just alluded to. I'm not sure he clarified why, but it's a wonderful model to bring to the table issues you have terrible concern over if you're business. We aren't getting this done in time, Ralph. Can you help us? And fortunately, I think I'm the kind of union guy that says, you know what, I'll work with you, not against you. Okay? And I do need to make a comment on why I do that, and angered some of my colleagues from labor the other day on another matter. But the fact is, I know that this state depends, and I tie all of this into one issue. We depend on income taxes to fund our programs here. And if I'm not somehow seeing the big picture to help grow this economy and make sure jobs are paying income taxes, and it's going to be my corrections officers who suffer, my DEQ, I could go on. I have 20, 30 state agencies. So I've got to take on a new model. It's my opinion that we will not have a consumption tax. We're going to live on the income tax. And if you agree you're going to live on the income tax, it changes how I'm beginning to view things, and I'm becoming an economic development advocate, and have in the last 2 weeks probably become a leader in this building in a number of issues that some don't like, but that's going to be my independent streak. So we opposed the bill not only from an intellectual point of view, from a practical point of view. It doesn't make a lot of sense that this bill didn't come to the work group as all other bills over the last 8 years have. Labor, management, city, county, this bill did not come to the work group, and my comment is I believe in a nice way, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, that's a mistake. So if we want something like this to work, it ought to first go through the coalition that has to do the work, let them make some changes, some recommendations, and then we all cooperate and smile together, and we walk out of here and say we've done a good job. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kroner. Are there any questions?
No, he's laughing. He wants to laugh at me.
No, I'm not.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who wishes to testify? Jessica, did you want to say anything? No? Anybody else?
Everybody else.
Hey, with that, then I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3833. And since there's nothing else before us, we stand adjourned.
That's true. Program is working really well.